Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And thanks for joining us. Andrew Foster joins us from Harvell and Collins. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, April 18th is quickly approaching.
Yes,
it is.
I feel it every day. I got to get stuff going.
See, Ben, it's a good thing. I'm your weekly reminder that you have to get those return ready to be filed.
I've had a little devil on my shoulders. Keep reminding me.
That's right. Well, it's also a time at Harvell and Collins where we're diligently getting our tax information together for our estates.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this might be a good point in time to kind of go over, you know, what are the basic tax requirements that we deal with in pretty much every estate administration that we handle at Harvell and Collins. A lot of questions I've been getting lately are, you know, from either beneficiaries or executors, you know, and they keep going, my accountant's saying something about a K-1. What does that mean?
Right.
You know, and then I, you know, have to go through and say, okay, here's what the process is. You know, first, your job as executor is to make sure that the decedent's final tax return gets filed.
Right.
So that's a standard 1040 form, personal income tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And really, Ben, what we're looking at is the period of time, during the year that the decedent lived.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously, you know, if you have a death very early in the year, there may not even be a tax filing that's going to be required, because, you know, there may not be enough income that was generated during that person's lifetime for that particular year to cause a return to be filed. You can always file an income tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you want to mark it as a final deceased taxpayer return, you know, there's no problem with that. But obviously, if you don't have if you don't meet the income requirements and you're talking about the standard deduction, personal exemption, once you add those two together, if you're below that threshold, then you're not required to file a return.
You may be looking to get money back though, aren't you?
That's right. And that's the other thing that I'll say is that the other flip side is that maybe a decedent, maybe an individual doesn't live very long but has some withholding.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they wouldn't be required to file a return, but you would need to file it in order to claim that refund.
Mm-hmm.
And so the executor basically would to, you know, file the return, sign the 1040 as the personal representative, executor, mm-hmm. or administrator of the estate. Would label the taxpayer as being deceased, and, you know, then could claim the refund through the estate. Now there is Form 1310, which is to claim a deceased taxpayer's refund.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you attach a letters testamentary or letters of administration along with the return, you don't have to file that particular form. They'll just send the check made payable to you as the executor, and you deposit in the estate
right.
account and you know, just now, disperse the proceeds.
Now, if you have somebody, and I've known of these situations, everybody has really, if somebody dies in the first 4 months of the year,
mm-hmm.
they've got the previous year's tax return to file, but then next year they'll have one for the,
that's right.
for the current
that's
year.
Right. So, you know, right now, you'd be looking at, they lived all of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they died, you know, early in 2017 potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly a lot of those, you know, files that are coming to the office right now, Ben, we're just saying the best thing we can do is probably just get an extension. Unless, you know, you're sure that you have all the information together. And one of the things that's very easy to do is pull, if you have access to their old tax return,
mm-hmm.
To look and compare what 1099s, you know, what maybe W-2s, any other tax information that you have, and compare it to last year's return and make sure that you have all the information. And if it, you know, adds up and it looks like you do, then of course you can proceed with the filing. But a lot of times the safest thing to do is kind of look at what the income was for last year, maybe pay a little bit,
mm-hmm.
You know, cause again, extensions to file, not to pay. And then get an extension of time to file and then file the return once you're sure that the information's there. The other thing is let's say you don't have access to the 2015 return. You know, you can always order a transcript of return, and get tax transcripts. We talked about this for
right.
the wage transcripts
right.
for the previous year later on. They don't, you know, it takes a little while to get in the IRS's system. So that would be another reason to get an extension. So then you could request this information and make sure that you're putting all the information on the tax return that's
mm-hmm.
going to be required. So those are some, you know, kind of helpful hints to people out there who go, where do we even start? I mean, I don't even know.
Yeah.
You know, how we get these returns done, but that's where we go.
Well, now, are there returns following that? I mean, following the final deceased return, are there still others? The state may earn income?
Exactly, Ben. So what happens is that when an individual dies, mm-hmm. You know, their Social Security number, for lack of a better term, dies with them.
Right.
And then the estate gets generated, and then the estate gets its own tax identification number. You apply for an EIN number for the estate, and then that identification number is where any income would be reported for during the estate process. And the estate files what's called a 1041, which is a estate income tax return.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are just, you know, kind of under the impression when they hear estate taxes, they think of the big 706
sure.
estate tax return, which is, you know, really only applicable
currently
$5 million basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not the return we're talking about. What we're talking about here is an income tax return for the estate. And again, the reason behind that is that, you know, you have to be able to report that income for the estate under this new tax ID number. And the threshold for filing on this one, Ben, is a lot less. I mean, we're talking about with the personal deduction and personal exemption standard deduction for a personal return, you know, we're talking $12,000 for a state income tax return or for a trust for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
The threshold filing requirement is $600.
Yeah, it's like a 1099.
So, you know, basically you're looking at, you know, a very minimal, very small estate could easily eclipse that number and would be required to file a 1041, an estate income tax return. And this is where, you know, those emails that I've been getting and those phone calls I've been getting, what about my K-1? This is where that K-1 is generated, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason behind this is because an estate, you know, you can kind of look through it, just a flow-through entity. Basically, the estate marshals together the decedent's assets, pays the necessary expenses, gets the necessary income,
mm-hmm.
and then passes that money out ultimately to the designated beneficiaries under either a will or through intestate succession. So if you think about it, anything that you pass out can carry out what we call distributable net income, DNI,
mm-hmm.
and therefore that can generate a K-1, which would not be, you report it as being taxable at the estate level, but you don't actually pay the tax in the estate.
Mm-hmm.
You pay it at the beneficiary level. And therefore, you get a K-1, and that's when the people end up having to put this information on their own personal returns.
K-1 forms are for a variety of things.
Exactly.
Aren't they? I mean, there are some corporations that use K-1s.
Exactly. I mean, corporations, trusts. Anytime you have a flow-through entity, partnerships,
right.
a flow-through entity where really you're getting your tax attributes from that entity,
mm-hmm.
but that entity in and of itself might not be the one that's paying the tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, someone ends up paying it, Ben. We all know that.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So it's either going to be the estate or it's going to be the beneficiaries. And if in the case where the beneficiaries are paying it, they do need to get a K-1. And it's not just a form that I invent out of
yes,
you know,
that's right.
the sky. I can't just draft you a K-1. You file the 1041, and then from those numbers that go on the 1041, K-1 is generated from that. So
mm-hmm.
you have to actually do the 1041 filing. That will then produce the K-1, and then you take the K-1 and include it on your personal return. So a lot of times this time of year, again, Ben, I'm speaking with beneficiaries and telling them, hey, look, you know, file your extension of time,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, odds are we're going to get this filed and you're not going to have enough time necessarily to get your K-1 and be able to get that to your preparer and be able to do your own personal return. Because again, keep in mind, in the event that you file ahead of time, you're looking at an amended return situation because you've got to come in and add this K-1. Because just like a W-2 and a 1099 gets reported to the IRS,
mm-hmm.
guess what? K-1's going to get reported to the IRS as well. They get a copy.
Sure.
And then the beneficiary is going to get a copy as well.
So, with all this said and done, then the old Ben Franklin saying there's nothing certain in life but death and taxes, you know, there's apparently taxes after death.
Well, that's right.
So,
that's right.
So people have to pay attention to that for estate planning.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, the thing about the estate income tax is that, you know, it's the top marginal rate on an estate,
mm-hmm.
you know, is in the ballpark of $13,000.
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, on even middle range estates, I would say, you know, it's in our best interest to try to pass that income out on
mm-hmm.
these K-1s. You know, on some smaller estates, though, Ben, you know, where it's not really going to make a difference because we don't have that much income generated, You know, and keep in mind there's a lot of deductions you get on mm-hmm. your estate income tax return that can reduce that amount of income. Sometimes it's simpler just to say, look, if there's a couple $100 that's payable, you know, we can pay that through the estate process, mm-hmm. and then that way you don't have to worry about the K-1 potentially.
Some estates live on for quite a while. You have famous ones like the Marilyn Monroe or Elvis Presley estate, and probably I wonder if George Steinbrenner, you know, who died when there was no estate tax, if his estate is still existent. Does that follow whatever the moving target is on estate tax?
That's right. I mean, basically you would just continue to file the 1041 every year. Most of the time in most of the estates we deal with, we can usually get it wrapped up in a year.
Right.
You know, it's difficult sometimes when we have a death towards the end of one tax year, kind of like you mentioned, and mm-hmm. then have more income in the next particular year. But the good news is that an estate, just like a trust, doesn't mm-hmm. have to be a calendar year taxpayer. We can be, a fiscal year.
Oh, really?
So basically we can elect to, you know, let's say a decedent dies in August. We can say, okay, we'll go from August to August versus, you know, going from August and then filing a return for 2016 and then ultimately having more transactions in 2017, have to file another return.
That makes sense.
So there's a benefit there that we can elect, to try to get it, you know, cleaned up as quickly as possible. The problem is that even though, we've got most, you know, even though we can be a fiscal year taxpayer for an estate, most of those tax attribute forms, the 1099s and everything, aren't really released until the following year. So we run into that problem sometimes.
Okay. All right. Again, we'll have more to come as we continue on on Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins. If you want to find out more about your own situation, call on the folks at harvellandcollins.com at 726-9050. And you can reach Andrew at afoster@harvellandcollins.com.